You're listening to Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by the Torn by Sports Podcast Network and blogtalkradio.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hello, John.
Hello.
Gosh. Hello, Devin.
Oh, hello.
I don't care. We're recording and this is how
Fancy
it's going.
Seeing you guys here.
Oh, yes, folks. We are all laughs. There's about 10 minutes of recording before this even started that may make it onto the next outtakes. And folks, yeah, it was good. Prime. We might as well set the jokes aside because, wow, the Jazz. We're going to talk a lot about the Jazz and an upcoming schedule and what's happened last night. What we're looking at is the playoffs are very, very close. We got a lot to talk about. Let's start with last night. Is there any better place to start than last night, really?
Man, I wish I had watched the whole game.
How much did you not watch?
But that, well, my son had a concert last night, so I watched the beginning and just kind of like following on box score updates.
Oh yeah.
But man.
Yeah, it was.
So yeah, it was a must win. Chris Paul was incredible. I did manage to see the ending. Clippers did what they usually did. They got chippy. And I saw also that in the last 2 minutes report, the refs blew three calls with Chris Paul. He got away with three fouls in 21 seconds. That was amusing.
Yeah.
But it was a statement game. It was one where if they want home court, they had to win this one. And they did.
And I don't know, did either of you catch a couple of tweets that came from Bill Orem last night after the game? One of them was Austin Rivers, where he said, if they have to make 10 threes in a row in order to beat us, we'll live with that. It's like, really? Okay.
Well, sure. Yeah, you will live with that.
I know you
How
will.
How many teams are going to hit?
Well, it's
10?
Like,
I know.
It's like we're living with the game where the Thunder made 12 threes in a row.
Exactly.
Like, okay.
But
it's living with it.
Yeah, I just don't see the point in making those kind of statements post game. There's just no point in it. It's like, okay.
Well, that's the Clippers. It was really funny when Chris Paul made a comment about how Gobert likes to talk a lot. And there was thousands of pot meat kettle jokes in response to that tweet.
Yeah.
I mean, the Sacramento Kings guys, Sacktown Royalty.
Right.
They had one. It was like, Mr. Pot, Chris Paul on line one is like, what, Dolores? It's Mr. Kettle on line two. He's like, I told him not to call me here. just any variant you can come up with.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. So let's get into why it is that Chris Paul was frustrated like that after the game. I mean, you know, last week when we recorded, I said one of the things that needed to happen for the Jazz to beat the Clippers is Rudy had to come big. And I'm not going to say that he hasn't played decently before. I mean, I go back and look at their last meeting, 2 weeks ago? And Rudy and Jordan's numbers were fairly similar. But let's be honest, Jordan has outplayed him in both contests this year. And so Rudy needed to come with a physicality that he hasn't before. And he did. And you could tell he got under the skins of Chris Paul. And I don't know how much you said you missed the second half, but DeAndre Jordan in the fourth quarter, Devin, did you notice his body language late in the game? DeAndre Jordan, he looked just frustrated as all get out late in that game.
I would say flustered.
Yeah.
He seemed noticeably flustered.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just him. You saw Rudy kind of, there were those, I'm guessing, John, the missed foul calls were the two pushes by Paul on Rudy at the end.
I would
I'm
think
guessing
so.
Those are at least one, if not two, of those missed calls. But you saw him get into it late in the game with DeAndre where it was chippy. You saw it with Paul. You saw it with Redick where he had got the taunting call.
Yeah,
which
was
bogus.
I still don't understand that call. I think the refs felt like they had to call something in that situation. It's like, okay, then call the retaliation push on Redick for heaven's sakes. That didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, so you know, I think Rudy has a way of really getting to just about anybody.
Yeah.
You know, I think Joe Ingles has that same ability a lot of the time.
Yes. Yes, but, he does.
It's actually nice because I feel like when you're winning, you can do that a little bit.
Absolutely.
You know, 2 years ago, no, Rudy, you know, shut up and just play the game. But if you're frustrating guys and that's giving you that mental edge, I love it.
Yeah.
No,
yeah. And I liked how he didn't back down. And it actually kind of reminded me how much I dislike the Clippers. There's been other teams that have seemed closer to being the rivals for the Jazz this year. But the Jazz and Clippers, that looks like that could potentially be the most heated first round matchup in all the playoffs.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, back to moments last night where you could tell that Rudy was getting there, was that how often did you see DeAndre Jordan, and eventually Blake Griffin was doing it a couple times, eventually got called for it, how often they would take and two-hand shove him out of the paint on rebounds? Did you notice that was going on quite a bit?
Well, yeah, it was going on even at the free throw line.
Yeah, it was. I mean, DeAndre Jordan, I'm surprised they didn't call lane violations on him because he would step out into it. But they would oftentimes push him and shove him in the paint when there's rebounds involved in it. And they finally called it on Blake, but it's obvious that Rudy is coming to mean something in the NBA for other teams when your opponent's stars have to start doing things because they're frustrated with what he's doing. That's a testament to Rudy, really. So, it was just a very an all around good game, and I'm looking forward to a first round matchup between these two teams.
I'll tell you what my favorite part was. My favorite part of that game is probably when it was late in the fourth quarter. I think about 3 minutes left. Griffin gets the ball just outside the post.
Yeah.
And he tries to back down Gordon.
Yeah, on the switch.
And he can't do it.
Yep.
Because it's not like he gave up. I mean, he really went at Hayward, and Hayward just stood his ground. And you think about who this kid was coming into the league out of Butler. I mean, there is no way that he does that 5 years ago.
And, John, I'm sure you've seen that play over Twitter a couple times, haven't you?
Yeah, so, that's a popular gift that went around.
The one thing that's missing in that defensive series, Hayward did that. And as soon as Griffin turned around and passed out of the post, you know where Hayward ended up? Trapping the guard up at the top of the key. And that forced them to push it out the outside. And they got a shot clock violation, I think, on that possession, didn't they, Devin? Or at least a bad shot. But that was atypical last night of what we saw from the Jazz. They did not back down. Hayward didn't back down.
No, and it's just one example of how much stronger this team has gotten in more ways than one. Yeah, Gordon's put on the weight and the muscle, but, I mean, it seems like for years we were wanting the Jazz to have a little bit of attitude, and I think we finally have that. They're finally getting their swagger, and that's a great thing coming into this return to the playoffs, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we have other games we got to talk
about.
Yeah,
we do. And, I mean, let's go back over this weekend. I think last week we talked about this stretch of three games. We all said, didn't we all say 2-1?
No.
I did.
No.
Did I? No, you did. Devin did.
I said I hoped for 2-1, but I thought it was more likely going to be 1-2.
That's right. And I said,
I was, and you know, if Rudy hadn't missed the Oklahoma City game, I wonder if they could have gone 3-0.
No, I agree. And Devin's right. Devin made the call. I think both of you and I backed off thinking 1-2. Devin, without hesitation, said 2-1. So kudos.
Stay positive, guys.
Kudos. I mean, and it was a great weekend for ball. I mean, which game stood out the most to you guys over the weekend, John? I mean, was it the Clipper game? And if not, how big was that Houston game?
Well, the Houston game was huge. Houston is far ahead of them in the rankings. It was at Houston. And the Jazz just showed that they have Houston's number. you have the Rockets offense against the Jazz defense, and the Jazz defense won. It might not look like the Jazz defense won since the Rockets ended with 108, but the Rockets defense is such that the Jazz were able to get 115. In fact, it was almost identical. They beat Rockets 115-108. They beat the Clippers 114-108.
Yeah.
When I was watching the Clippers game, it just felt like the Clippers were going to run away with this. And they won the half by like 5 or 7 or something.
I think it was 7 or 8 somewhere on.
Yeah, there. Something like that. But the Rockets, it felt like they controlled that whole game. No matter how close it got, no matter how bad the refs were, man, that Houston game. it was awful, but they still found a way to win.
Yeah, they did frustrate Harden. I mean, and that's the other thing.
He was like 1 for 11 from 3 or something crazy like that.
And that's the other thing about both of these games. It featured two stars or two sets of stars that do a lot of complaining. I mean, Harden, how long did Harden sit at the end of the first quarter and just stare at the ref and talk to him, plead with him why he didn't get that call on George Hill on the screen? It's like, wow.
Yep.
You know, so and you had the same thing with the Clippers. So, no, you're right. It was a great game, a great win defensively, you know, and then the Clippers last night. Again, I never thought last night was necessarily in doubt, but every time the Jazz would score, the Clippers would answer. And you felt like the same thing with Houston. And then somehow the Jazz pulled out, you know, their magic cards in the second half of both those games or something. And they buckled down and they won both those games. And then that Oklahoma City game, anything out of that game really catch your.
Really? Really? You're going to ask that?
I'm asking that because I want to hear your guys' thoughts.
John, answer the question. There is one answer that you need to give.
I know. I want to hear the thoughts.
What caught my eye from the Thunder game?
Yeah.
Once it looked like the game was out of hand, they let Exum and Burks take over, and they scored 43 points between the two of them. That was my takeaway.
There you go. And that, don't ask me really. I had a reason for asking that. I mean, there wasn't a lot of...
Rudy Gobert is crucial to this team.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But I'm glad you went to the bench in that game in Oklahoma City, because it was interesting to see Quinn ride that wave late in the third and fourth quarter when the game was out of hand and the starters just weren't cutting it. I mean, Hayward had a horrible night, you know, so did Hill. I mean, they just weren't very good that night, and he rode his starters right back into that game in the fourth quarter. It was pretty close. Did I say starters or bench players?
You said starters. You meant bench players.
I meant bench players. You know.
Sorry, guys.
Sorry, guys. Anyway.
Alan.
All right, stop it. All right, let's look ahead. John, big road trip coming up.
Four-game road trip. Four-game road trip all against decent teams. Detroit is in the playoffs. Cleveland is in the playoffs. The Bulls actually, I think, just fell out of the playoffs. They're a half game out right now. And the Pacers are in the playoffs. All four of these Eastern teams are motivated to do well. Cleveland has a 2.5 game lead on that number one spot, but they have not been playing well. They've lost 6 of their last 10. They're kind of looking for answers right now. But, you know, they're winnable. The Jazz could go 4-0. Just because it's the road, I would expect them to probably drop one of these games. You know, Cleveland's nothing to sneeze at or anything. They've just been struggling lately, and I feel like they're vulnerable for the Jazz to catch one there. Pistons, you know, as long as George Hill's playing, I feel really good about that game because Reggie Jackson is the worst defensive point guard in the NBA.
However, the Pistons have proven to be a little bit of a thorn when you travel to the Palace the last couple of years, though.
Yeah, but you know, they're 33-34, which is good enough to be the 7th in the East, but you know, they're an under 500 team, and I like how the Jazz match up with them. You have Drummond, who's a bad offensive player, so I don't expect them to get much out of him with Rudy there. Like I said, Reggie's bad, and this should be a night where George Hill can get one of his 20-point games. I guess my main concern with them would be if KCP has a career night. Just make sure he's held in check and they'll be fine.
Okay. So you're saying 4-1 on this trip, Devin?
I'm saying 3-1
or 3-1. Sorry,
it's a four-game road trip.
You know what I mean.
I expect them to drop one, although I really could see them going 4-0.
Devin,
3-1.
There is a back to back in there.
Yeah, Cleveland is the back to back, I believe, and so that's the one I expect them to drop.
Yeah, I expect them to drop that one as well. Plus, Jazz did beat Cleveland, and it was, unless I miss my guess, it was fairly handily here in Salt Lake.
Last year?
No. Or was earlier it this year?
No, they won. I want to say they won by 8.
Was it by 8?
Let me see if I can find it.
I can't remember. I thought they were up quite a bit at one point in time during the game. I don't remember. Maybe.
They had control. I can't remember when that was. When was that? There it is. Yeah, 100-92.
Okay. So I
1 by 8.
Yeah, I mean, do NBA teams put games on their calendar and circle them? Sometimes, yes. Is this one that I think LeBron and company have circled? Probably not, but I still expect LeBron and company to come out and protect their home court on this particular situation. So, no, I'm with you guys. I think they'll lose that one on the back-to-back and could end up 3-1. So before we carry on any further, I want to ask the two of you, let's revisit for a moment. To start the season, our predictions for where the Jazz would end. I think we all kind of agreed on right around, 51? I said 51. I think that's what you said, John. Do you foresee them winning 9 more games of their final 15?
Going 9-6. Very doable. The thing that makes me worried about that and think that it might be more likely they go 8-7 is the fact that the Warriors and Spurs are actually close in their battle for the number one seed. And since those are the last two games of the season, like 2 months ago, I saw both of those games as one where those teams might be resting players, but both of those games might be one where those teams want to win. So right. that puts an extra flavor in it. Durant should be back in time for the Warriors game. Spurs, we don't know how long LaMarcus is going to be out. If by the time they get to those two games and they don't mean anything for seeding, then yeah, I can see them getting that 9th win in there.
And,
8-7 is really looking more likely at this point.
And I don't think either one of them won tonight. So the last time I checked, the Spurs were, I think they took the lead last night, the number one seed last
night.
They
are tied, but Spurs have the tiebreaker.
Yes.
So
it's you're right. It's going to come down the stretch. And with or without LaMarcus, the Spurs, you know, you've got Kawhi Leonard is making a case for MVP right now. So watch out. Even without LaMarcus, they're a good team, a very good team. So I foresee that game being tough no matter what. All right. Let's see. Next. All right. Let's talk about Favors and his health.
Yep. Bone contusion. They're going to reevaluate him in a few days. I've seen estimates that he'll probably be out 2 weeks with this. He hasn't looked right all year. He's had maybe 3 games all year where we're like, this is the Derek Favors we know. But mostly he's looked hobbled and his offense hasn't been as good. He hasn't been as mobile. We can all see it now when we see that, his left knee is still a problem. I really hope that. You know, whatever they're doing to treat him this time might be able to get him closer back to his old self. But this might be something where we just don't get Favors back until an off season and next season. And we're just going to have to rely on, having 70% Favors for the rest of this season.
Yeah. On that note, how do you feel about... I can't remember where I read this, but it seems that Quinn's going to kind of play with the rotation based on situations going forward. So last night you had Diaw start. Maybe other nights you go Joe Johnson, perhaps, which seems to work pretty well for them sometimes. What do you think of that? It's almost like they're going to play the power forward by committee, maybe switch it up depending on the matchup.
Well, it sounded like the plan all along was to have Joe play the four, but they only wanted him to play like 20 minutes a night, not play him too much so he can be ready to go full on out during the playoffs. I liked what they did in starting Dia. He's really more of a placeholder, and Joe Johnson can then do damage off the bench. There might be some games where he feels like he needs to start Joe Johnson, and those will be fine because I do think it's really crucial for the Jazz to get home court. And, you know, sure, I can see it. I see Dia starting some nights and Johnson starting some nights.
Yeah, so
Favors is back.
And I do like it. I mean, you used last night's matchup as an example. I thought Diaw played well initially against Blake, but then I thought Joe held his own against Blake late in that game, and it was nice to have him. And I just, that's the versatility I think the Jazz have right now with these signees that they brought in last year and these trades with George Hill, everything like that, is they have the versatility now where Quinn can do this. And when we don't have a guy healthy like Favors, he can play with that versatility based on matchups, and it works to their advantage. I wouldn't even call it a Band-Aid. I'd call it sometimes their advantage. So, all right. The last thing Jazz news we wanted to talk about was the Undefeated article.
Yes, there was an article on ESPN in Undefeated, and it was all about Black players, past and present, who've been on the Jazz, and how they deal with that, and what it's like for them, and it was a really, I thought overall it was a really positive article. I really enjoyed reading it. I liked getting those insights. I liked hearing some things from guys like Thurl Bailey and Daryl Griffith and Ron Boone that maybe we haven't heard before. Overall, I thought it was really a really positive article. I've seen some people who've had some complaints about it, but. You know, I thought it was a positive. I really enjoyed reading those insights and learning about those things.
Yeah, me too. Did you get a chance to read it, Devin?
No, I honestly saw it and I thought, wow, they're just trying to stir up controversy. And so I just skipped right over it. Because I didn't expect there to be much to it, but I'll go back and give it a shot if you guys think it's a worthwhile read.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, there are a lot of guys who participated: Millsap, Joe Johnson, B. Russ.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear B. Russ's thoughts on it. Actually, that one caught my attention. It's worth it, Devin. And anybody out there, you know, listening who has not spent some time reading. Go check it out. It's the undefeated.com. Just look, you'll find it. It's a great article. I thought they tackled the subject fairly well with a lot of they really covered it, you know, with sensitivity and covered it very well. I thought it was just a very well-written piece, and everybody involved offered up some wonderful insight that I had no idea about. Right down to the restaurants in Salt Lake City, I didn't even know were there. So it was really quite good. So,
yep.
All right. That cuts it for Jazz. Let's move next to NBA Rapid Fire.
Yes. My first topic would be with the struggling Cavs. They are 2.5 games ahead, but do you think they will hold on to that number one seed through the end of the year?
You know, I don't know. For a while, I thought yes, and I still want to say yes, but with their struggles lately, I don't know.
That's the thing. I think unless they turn this around soon, the Wizards could... Yeah, the Wizards could actually challenge for the number one spot. They did just lose, but they are three games back, but they are the hottest of any team in the East right now. They've won 7 of their last 10.
And don't forget who's in the number two spot. Boston's played really well this year. Aren't they still number two?
They are still number two, although they've gone 5-5 over their last 10.
Okay.
And that's what I'm looking at is momentum. What is the momentum for these teams? And I'm seeing the Wizards have a lot of momentum going on.
Well, and if
I think Cavs got to really be conscious and not just squander their seeding here at the end of the season.
And I'd expect LeBron to understand that better than anybody. I mean, when you look at it in the NBA, teams that are successful going into the playoffs usually hit the playoffs running, not limping, not falling, not barely making it. They're running. You know, we found when teams limp into the playoffs, they don't do very well. And I don't think the Cavs want to do that.
Cleveland lost. They lost to Miami twice. They lost to the Pistons on the road. They did beat the Magic, and then they lost to the Rockets on Sunday. You know, right now it just doesn't look like they are stepping up to their competition. And guys, you know, a lot of it has to be Kevin Love is missing. But
guys,
Devin's rolling his eyes over here. Guys, he's about so done much. With this.
And I have to stop you right now. What are you worried about? Kevin Love is expected to be back like in the next week, I think. They're going to start getting guys back. I don't know when J.R. Smith's coming back, but you're talking about LeBron James. So I don't care if they squander this and they limp into the playoffs as a 3 seed, which I don't think they will. They'll be the number 1 seed. But the truth is
J.R. Smith is back.
Is he back? Okay. See, so they're getting healthy. They're going to get everyone back. They're going to put this all together. They're going to be fine. And even if they weren't, Alan, let me finish. What's going to happen is they're going to get matched up and they're going to put it together in that first round series, and then they'll be coasting the rest of the way. I cannot see Cleveland having a series go more than 6 games and they end up in the finals.
I had this optimism like Devin about a week ago and thought, nah, there's no way. And then they've just, it's been difficult lately. I want to ask this, John, since we're on this subject, tell me, and I know this is supposed to be rapid fire, but let's jump into this for a second. How has Darren's numbers looked since he's been with the Cavs?
Darren. Oh, that's a good question. I haven't really looked at his stuff. I can tell you in their game against the Rockets where they lost, but Darren, he was 2 for 6 from the field, but he was a plus 10 for the minutes that he played. They just couldn't stop Houston from scoring, and they do need another big man to help them out. I mean, right now Channing Frye is their backup center, and that's not going to cut it.
Nope.
I know they have Larry Sanders. They are probably going to play him at the D League for most of the rest of the regular season to just kind of get him into shape and get him where they need to. But it really just all comes down to they need Love back.
And this won't be, you know, the NBA's premier shot blocker from 2 years ago, Larry Sanders, yet. You know, and I don't know he'll be back to that form, but even if you get a guy who's 3/4 of that form, that's going to be a huge addition for them if he can get back into some sort of an NBA conditioning and form. You think?
I missed the last part of whatever you said, but Larry Sanders was one of those stories where it was really shocking to me how quickly he fell from grace. He seemed like he was this great center. He seemed like he was on this upward trajectory, and then suddenly he lost love for the game and he just sucked. He just, the bottom fell out, and it seemed like he needed a couple of years to just get away from the game and go find himself.
Right.
Hopefully he found whatever he's looking for and they can get him back to what it used to be.
But that's what I'm saying. Even if you get 3/4 or even 1/4, whatever it is, of what Larry Sanders was, I still think that that's an impactful player for them.
Not a quarter.
Maybe not a quarter. I didn't mean a quarter.
If,
but
if you have
3/4
of Larry Sanders,
you know
Sanders
what I mean. But
I'm
if
playing.
You get, all right. Okay. So tonight I'm bumbling my words everywhere. All right. Both of you knock it off. But I'm saying 3/4, even if you get a guy who is maybe not quite what he was, don't you think he has somewhat of an impact for them once he's in a rhythm?
Yes.
It cut out on me again. Sorry.
I said, don't you think that Larry Sanders impacts them in the playoffs?
Somewhat. He is such a big question mark that I would think so. But, you know, he is the great unknown. We'll have to see how he looks once he's like starts playing the D League and actually plays a couple games with the Cavs to see what's there.
All right.
Because his last few games in the NBA were just awful.
Yeah, that's true. All right, rapid fire number 2.
Okay. Looking at the West, there's a lot of volatility. and it is in the 4-7 spot. The Jazz have the toughest schedule remaining, and so it is possible they could lose one or two games that we don't expect, and they could fall. They could fall to 5 or 6. You know, everyone's going through their ups and downs. The Nuggets, however, I would say, appear to have a lock on the 8th seed. Timberwolves and Blazers and Mavericks have all hinted that they're going to be able to go on a run, but I'm not sure that they have enough to be able to catch up the Nuggets, who have a 2.5 game lead right now, and their schedule does not look that bad up ahead. What say you?
I like where the Nuggets are going right now. Their trajectory looks good, not just this year, but in the future. Seriously, there is something that Denver needs to be excited about. Denver fans need to be excited about. So, no, I agree with you. I don't think they get better than the 8th seed. Do you?
No. They're not going to come anywhere near the 7th seed.
Right.
But a lot of their tougher opponents that they have are going to be home games, and Denver has a great home court advantage. They do have a 5-game road trip in there, but that includes the Hornets and the Pelicans and some other teams. You know, I think they'll be fine for that. They could go 500 the rest of the way, and they probably will. Might even do a little worse than that. They could finish the season 4 or 5 games under 500, and that'll still be good enough for them to get the 8th seed.
You know, I'm looking in the future, though, and you have to think that assuming the Jazz can bring everybody back, will be all right. But if you don't, you're going to be looking in the rearview mirror at Denver, aren't you?
Well, there's Denver. I think next year is going to be when the Timberwolves make their jump. I thought yes. It was going to be this year. I mean, they're improved, but
yeah,
they haven't quite made the jump. There's a lot of potential there. You know, maybe the Pelicans in this offseason put some talent around Davis and Cousins that makes more sense.
But I'm
you
just...
know, Blazers, they might be able to, they're poised well in free agency to upgrade some of their needs. There's a lot of young teams ready to move up, and a lot of the teams that are already on top don't look like they're getting weaker.
Right. And I'm just looking at Denver specifically since you brought them up. I mean, with Jokic, I mean, they look very good. Or look like they will be very good.
He gets more impressive every week. He's going to be something special. He's like the next unicorn. I don't know where he's going to be in 2 years, but he's like the Greek freak or like Kristaps Porzingis, where here comes this player that it just seems like the sky's the limit with his potential.
Yeah, absolutely. Passes the ball well, scores really well. Has great footwork, moves around the court extremely well. You're right. Sky's the limit for him. And for Denver, that's why you have to be watching that rearview mirror, because they're going to be very, very good. So, all right. Do you have a stop number 3?
No, that was it.
Okay. Do we have less listener questions?
I did not see any. I'll check real quick, but I don't think I got any. Well, really send that out.
Yeah, and
sooner before we
even
not
though you
send
don't
it out in the middle of the day.
Even though you don't send it out, I have to say one of our listeners, Brian, I know you're going to be listening. I'm disappointed. You're always one to bring a question to us, and this week you slipped. That's unacceptable, Brian.
Alan, don't call out the listeners on air.
I'm calling out Brian on air. Period. Okay. And he's going to subtweet or tweet at me one or the other tomorrow about it, and it's okay. I'll take it. He's already told me I'm blasphemous for calling Joe Jesus Johnson.
Well, you're not the only one that called him that.
Exactly. Is that blasphemous, John? Joe Jesus Johnson?
Depends why you're calling him that.
Because he hit the big shot last night.
All right.
Is that acceptable?
I'll remain neutral.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm going to hear about it from Brian now because you remain neutral. You're not helping my case here. All right, fine. All right, no listener questions. Let's go ahead and move on to Devin's quick hits.
All right. Let's do a little bit of NBA, I guess. Vince Carter scored over 20 points. He is the 6th player in NBA history to do so over the age of 40. Impressive, not impressive? Do you care?
Scoring that much, the age of 40, yes, it's impressive.
Are you just saying that because two of the guys to do so, you know, have statues outside of the Viv?
Wow, it really is.
Both.
Well, I want to ask a question. Did the greatest to ever play ever do that at age 40?
LeBron James is not 40 years old yet.
We're not talking about LeBron.
Michael
Jordan
did so.
Okay.
In a Wizards uniform.
Yes.
But Carl did it in a Lakers jersey, which I don't know. Maybe that's a typo. That never happened, right? That never happened.
But either way, yeah, I still consider it impressive. I do. And the way that Vince has done it, you know, he's called back to his younger years with a few of the moves he's put on, the dunks and things he's done this year. So no, I think it's impressive. Props to Air Canada. I'm still going to call him that.
I think the best thing about it is the way that he has transformed his game since he came into the league. He's not as flashy as he used to be. He's really put together a good career, I think.
Yeah, he has.
And evolved as he's needed to. You know, you don't stick around in the league that long without evolving your game, let's be honest. I just wanted to talk about this year. Is this the year of the triple-double, or is this just the new norm? And if this is the new norm, what is the reason for it? Because Westbrook continues to rack these things up. I don't know. I don't know like what. Like he's buying coffee in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
LeBron James, I believe, hit 10 on the season, which is a franchise record
and
for
I
Cleveland.
And I believe his 51st or 52nd of his career or something like that.
Yeah. I think Harden got one or two in the past week. It's nuts how many triple-doubles we're seeing, isn't it?
Yeah. John, you were going to give your answer. Is it the norm?
Yeah. I was going to say that some of it is the style of play that they're doing now with small ball. You're more likely as guards and small forwards to be able to get up to those 10 rebounds. Also a lot of your bigger guys are learning and loving the passing game. LeBron's averaging 9 assists this year, and we're going to see more and more of that. I mean, when Ben Simmons gets going, he's going to be an assist machine as well. So that just seems to be where the league is going.
Well, and look at Draymond Green, another guy who's been picking up some triple doubles here and there as well. So no, you're right. The other thing is my question to add to that, Devin, is does Westbrook do this on a consistent basis after this year? And does Harden? Because I wonder if Harden, the reason why he does it is the product of the system that D'Antoni's put in place. And then Westbrook, I don't know if it's because he's just raised his game to prove a point without Durant or what. Do we see these two players continue doing this after this year?
I think so.
John?
Yeah, I think so. In fact, I'm looking at seasons of triple doubles. Westbrook's had 32 this year, and he now has the second most triple doubles in one season. He still needs to catch Oscar. He would need to get a triple double in half of his remaining games if he wants to catch him,
which is likely.
Yeah. Let's put it this way. I mean, what Russ is doing is special, but the team is built for him to be special in this way.
Right.
We're going to see a lot of players who are going to get their triple doubles, but it's going to be like, you know, 10 or 12 a season, like LeBron. Who else is get a triple doubles this year? Draymond, you know, those guys are going to get them, but they're going to be occasional. We're not going to see what Russ is doing becoming a new norm. We're going to see more guys get one or two here or there, but.
Okay, well, let's make this a little bit about the Jazz. Who's the first Jazz man to get a triple-double? Who will it be? Who will get the next one? And I don't care if it's in a Jazz uniform. Who do you think is best poised as a player to get one?
That's a good question.
I think it's Hayward.
I think so as well. Rudy came close, I think, with assists or something like that a few weeks back. I can't remember. He had six or six. I mean, I could be wrong. I'd have to go back and look, but I don't know. Unless Rudy can rack up that many assists, I don't think Rudy will. But Hayward is, in my opinion, I agree with John, is most likely to do so.
Yeah, but Rudy could rack up 10 blocks.
That's what it was. That's what it was. A few weeks back, he had a double-double, and then he had six blocks. So you're right. Rudy could have a game where that happens. But I think Hayward's more likely to get there before Rudy does.
What about George Hill? Can you see him getting 10 boards one night?
I still don't see it.
It could happen.
But I still don't see it before Hayward. I think Hayward's been closer than all of them more times than not, and I see Hayward getting it first.
Okay, let's talk a little bit of March Madness. Let's talk a little bit about the ladies, right? Right, the ladies.
Wink, wink, wink.
Do we just give the trophy to UConn, or is someone going to pull the upset?
Do we even need to have this conversation?
There's UConn and there's everybody else.
Exactly. Women's college basketball is UConn's world and everybody's playing in it. Period.
Not this year.
What?
Not this year.
Why?
Because I tell myself that every year.
Okay. I thought you were being serious. We both thought you were being serious for a minute
here. I am. Because one of these years, Notre Dame is going to take it all.
And Notre Dame's fandom just started bleeding through from Devin. Thank you, Devin.
This will be the year.
All right, next.
This will be the year. We'll talk about it.
Okay.
we could do a full episode about March Madness, and really we're not going to have time because it kicks off this weekend, I believe.
Yes, it does.
So I just want to know, have you guys done your bracket yet? Or are you not going to do a bracket?
I haven't, and I don't know if I'm going to do one this year.
Same.
You guys suck.
I would like to, but I'm not really invested this year. I think I'll still do it just so we can talk about it. In fact, that's my motivation. My motivation to fill out his bracket is just so we can talk about it and compare it on future episodes.
Okay. So are we going to make this a little competition?
Oh, dear.
Sure.
I'm like John. I'm probably not going to do a bracket. What are you talking competition?
Well, Alan to do.
Now I'm committing live on this show to do a bracket. Alan, will you do the same?
Seriously?
No, we're joking.
I know. Okay, stop it. I guess I could probably print one out and do one for fun. I don't know.
There you go.
Okay. What is there, like a bragging right for the winner? Does the loser get a punishment? Because we need to determine this now. We can't do this next week.
How about the winner gets a bragging right and then a 2-minute segment to just rant about whatever they want?
And the loser has to sing a song?
And the loser has to sing a song.
Holy crap.
Not a full song. We're not going to torture someone.
The loser has to sing an Ace of Base song.
Okay. I like this.
Oh, no.
I like this.
Devin just got all.
At least one verse and a chorus. You don't have to do the full song, but a verse and a chorus. Okay.
There is something seriously wrong with this bet right now.
All right. I like this.
There we go.
Hey, by the way, you two, I retweeted something yesterday that you guys would get a kick out of. Since we're talking about brackets, I didn't do it. Our good friends, my good friends that I've just recently gotten to know a little bit, SLC Culture is their name. Christian and Steven, they're on 1280 The Zone on Sunday mornings. But they did a bracket, and it's hilarious. It says, what happens when you do your bracket based on academic rankings for art, music, and school? And they did a bracket specifically on art, music, and academics. And their final four teams were Southern Methodist, Michigan, Florida State, and UNC, with Southern Methodist and UNC playing in the championship.
Yeah, I don't think that bracket would win.
But it's a fun bracket. Somebody had a little fun outside of the norm with academic and arts. I don't know.
That's a lot of work, though.
It is.
You should use that bracket, Alan. You should just use that one for the bet.
Right? Maybe okay. I should.
We got to do one more quick hit because right. we need to talk about LeVar Ball. Okay, because he wants a $1 billion shoe deal for his kids, and he's talking trash about being able to absolutely school his airness in a game of one-on-one. What is with this guy? Is he delusional? Is he on drugs? Or am I wrong and he's actually right?
Or all of the above? Okay, not the wrong part, but maybe the other two.
Well, God bless an enthusiastic parent, but, you know, I think he would really help his son by talking less. I just think of over-vocal parents of players in years past. Some have been on the Jazz, and it is...
I was going to say, John, this sometimes sounds a little headaches. Familiar. This does reminds me of someone.
who, Devin?
I don't know. I might be barking up the wrong tree here.
Who, Devin? Who?
I don't want to make anyone mad. I'm trained to be nice.
Yeah.
Don't break your Burke on it, though.
I don't know what that means.
I don't either. I was trying. You were going somewhere, so I tried it too. Never mind. Forget it. All right, that joke was bad.
Leave the puns to the pun master. I have taken several classes in pun fu. I got this.
Hey.
Okay, but
hey, that second round pick from the Wizards in 2021 could be the next All-Star. Just saying.
Well, look at what Rudy Gobert is. Anyway, we all agree he's crazy, right?
Yes, he's crazy.
Okay.
Yes.
$1 billion? No way. No way that happens, right? Nowhere even near that.
No.
No. Nope.
Do either of you offhand remember what LeBron's lifetime deal with Nike is? Like how much that was?
I don't remember.
It was like $300 million or something.
Yeah, maybe. That's what I was thinking. It was somewhere around there.
Yeah. That could be. But yeah.
Let me see. Oh, wow. They say it might be worth $1 billion.
Wow.
Huh. Let's see. Okay, I'm not going to read this on air, but yeah, the SI's article says the contract could be worth up to $1 billion with LeBron. So that's LeBron, but no rookie's coming near to that deal.
Nope, not going to happen. So,
but he's got three boys coming into the league potentially, right? Potentially. So, I mean, if you kind of average that out, maybe
is he gonna be their agent now too?
I don't know. Okay, I'm just saying the guy's nuts.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you don't want to count your chickens before they hatch. You look at the Griffin brothers, where Blake was number one, and then Taylor maybe played a season and a half.
He did.
I don't remember Taylor Griffin.
He played
so.
For somebody. Yeah, he was a second round pick and didn't really.
Yeah, that shows how much I really paid attention to that, or how much it really impacted the league, much less me. So,
all right, that's it for quick hits. Let's kick it over to pop culture.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I saw King Kong. Kong Skull Island, to be specific. Either of you see it?
No, sir.
No, I haven't. Heard good things about it, though.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It is a straightforward monster movie. The movie knows that you know what you're going to get when you walk in, so it doesn't waste any time in introducing the characters, getting them all grouped together, explaining what they're going to do on the island. They need to land on the southern part of the island, and then they're going to be picked up on the north part of the island in 3 days. And they're not really sure what to expect, but they get King Kong, and they also have all kinds of other monsters on this island. So it feels a lot like a Jurassic Park sequel in many ways. You have giant creatures, and you have these humans that need to get from here to there without getting killed. and, you know, many of them do. But it was just a blast. It was just a roller coaster ride of people fighting large creatures.
Hey. All right, then. I want to see it. I know my son does. I don't know when we're going to see it, because this coming weekend, we're going to go see Beauty and the Beast. So hopefully my daughter isn't going to listen to this podcast.
Oh, and there is something after the credits on it.
Oh, is there? Okay. Have to wait. Hopefully my daughter isn't listening to this podcast, because I just let the cat out of the bag, because that's supposed to be a surprise for Saturday that we're going to go see Beauty and the Beast. Oh, well. I've just let that cat out of the bag. All right, then.
Dad of the Year award.
Yeah, no
over
kidding.
Here.
So, yeah, I want to go see Kong. Would you say that it revives maybe the Kong image that maybe kind of went through some struggles?
What do you mean?
I don't know. I just read somebody wrote the other day that it says Kong Skull Island is the Kong movie we've all wanted. Was there any reason to believe that some of the others
yes.
went there, or yes?
Well, yeah. I mean, I enjoyed Peter Jackson's King Kong, but that was like 3 hours long, and this one doesn't bring Kong to the mainland. This one stays on the island, and you know, he's in his element the whole time. And you have all the other creatures. In fact, two different people play Kong, and one of them is Toby Cabell, who also plays one of the human characters. And he also has experience playing one of the apes from Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Okay.
And so it's kind of cool to see him getting regular work that about this. Let's see. Andy Serkis played King Kong in the one from 12 years ago. These are different guys, although it really does similar to what Kong was like in that movie. But this is, now that I think about it, it can't be a sequel to that movie, because Kong died in the King Kong movie,
yeah.
whereas Kong is still alive here. So I think they're just ignoring that movie.
Well, yeah, that's what, I don't know. This could go on in a long, drawn-out discussion, but that's the thing I've had with Godzilla and King Kong. It seems like they're constantly trying to revive the two of them, as if there's some reason to do
so.
Well,
they are. Godzilla 2 is in the works, and the eventual plan is to have a King Kong versus Godzilla movie.
That was my next question.
And yeah, so, you know, every time they do a King Kong movie, they haven't had a sequel, because Kong dies at the end. And so this one around, it's just a different King Kong movie. It's where Kong is facing these monsters, which is very similar to what a lot of the Godzilla movies are, where these other
yep.
creatures come up, and then suddenly Godzilla's the hero who can stop those creatures.
Yeah. In fact, that was the last Godzilla movie a couple of years back, was that very thing, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, there were like other creatures that Godzilla wound up fighting. And, you know, this Kong movie takes place in the 70s. So if they do eventually have King Kong versus Godzilla, I'm guessing they're not going to have the same human cast. But that is their eventual plan, is they want to create a big monster universe. Just like Marvel is a cinematic universe, they want to do a Godzilla King Kong universe. And I also read that they're planning a classic monsters universe with Tom Cruise and the Mummy. They want to have Russell Crowe is playing Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in that movie. And they're going to have Dracula and Frankenstein join in. And Johnny Depp's going to play the Invisible Man eventually. And so there's all these different studios want to come up with franchises where they can have this universe, where they can just keep putting stuff out. And so this is one of them. The monster movie universe is something that they're working on. And it was a big hit over the weekend, so it looks like they're on track.
There are so many puns and everything you could think of with that cast from the monster movie you just went across.
Yeah.
An invisible man played by Johnny Depp. How many people would like to see Johnny Depp as invisible? The same thing with Tom Cruise wrapped as a mummy. I'm just saying, that's just funny. All right. All right, so go see Kong Skull Island. And next
next week. I don't know if you're planning on seeing it, but next week we can try and dock Beauty and the Beast. Hopefully you'll go see it this weekend. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So
I hear it's a tale as old as time.
Oh, well done. Devin, you should see it too. Then we can all talk about it next week. You could join in the conversation.
Yeah, let me see if I can fit that into my busy schedule.
I knew that was reaching. Okay.
I'm busy watching TV shows, man.
I know.
There's a lot of TV going on.
All right.
What are you watching lately?
I've been checking out the Blacklist Redemption. It's all right. It's not the Blacklist, but it's decent. So I haven't gone one way or another with it yet. I'm not sure if we talked about This Is Us.
We've briefly mentioned it.
But I believe you asked me, Devin, have you watched it lately? And I was like, no, I've got a bunch of episodes to catch up on. Well, I did.
And you like it?
That show is so good. Like, seriously, that is one of the best shows on television.
Is it
If you're into that sort of Parenthood-esque drama, you know, sitcom, watch the show. It is good.
It's a good cast. If I remember correctly, Mandy Moore is in it.
Mandy Moore is in it. She is wonderful. I think I have a crush on her again.
All right.
You know, that's something that I didn't expect to happen since I was, 15. But, you know, here we are, years later, coming back together. It's destiny.
Rate it with Parenthood. Or is it impossible to rate the two of them together?
What do you mean, like Parenthood is like the A plus?
And then This Is Us is below, or are you putting them right on the same level, or what?
This Is Us is maybe A minus to A range.
So just below Parenthood.
But here's the thing. It's the first season. I can't just give them an A plus rating right off the bat. They have to kind of work their way up there. But it's a fantastic show. And I am also watching the conclusion of the Grimm series. Grimm, also on NBC.
It's coming down to a close, huh?
Yeah, I think there's 3 episodes left, if I recall. And so I always hate that because it seems like a television show tries to cram everything in at the very end and you're still left with all these questions. I get the feeling it's going to be a very abrupt ending and I'm not going to like that, but it's been a fun ride, so... What do you do?
Yep.
Lot of TV to watch, which is good because eventually we get to summer and there's not a darn thing to watch on TV anymore.
That's true.
Unless you want to watch, what is it, Wipeout?
Yeah, no.
I don't want to watch that anymore.
All right. There's your movie and TV watching of the week. I don't think we have anything else to add to close out our show, do we? Let's go ahead and close this thing up. Thank you.
I need to mention that Taylor Griffin played a grand total of 8 NBA games.
There's your what if information.
For who?
Phoenix.
Okay.
He scored 10 points in his NBA career total.
See, I just need like a couple games and I might be able to catch him.
And there we have it. We're shutting this thing down. Ending Jedi and Germs on totally useless information.
Hang on. Philadelphia, Brooklyn, call me. I am free for the rest of the season.
And if you need him and don't know how to get in touch with him, GMs, all you got to do is look up Jedi and Germs. Look up Torn by Devin on Twitter. But please, folks, you can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. Jedi and Germs. Facebook and Twitter, Jedi and Germs, each of us respectively, Germs Guy, Torn by Devin, and Jedi Zog. We love your to interact with you. We love hearing feedback on our show. Keep it coming. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you soon. John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.